Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this March 3rd, 2022. And our first item of business is to take the roll. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg, present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi. Representative Bernardi. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman.
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson.
Olson, present.
Olson, present. Representative Richardson is excused. Representative Torkelson.
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West.
West, present.
West, present. And Representative Bernardi.
Bernardi, present.
Bernardi, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Next on the agenda, we have approval of the minutes from our March 1st meeting. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was very short minutes. It was only one presentation, so I move the approval as presented.
Minutes are moved. Is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails. Members, we have a couple of bills on the agenda and an informational presentation. I hope to get to the informational presentation on corridors of commerce approximately 2 p.m. So I hope we can get through these bills in a half hour or so each. Our first bill, it comes from Representative Joachim. It's House File 3296. And I will move that House File 3296 be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce. And we have an amendment that we would like to have adopted first. But Representative Joachim, I personally want to thank you for your work on this issue of salvage titles. It has been a really vexing issue for this committee and the legislature in general. We decided to form a task force in our omnibus bill last year that was passed into law, and you have done a great job. I know Representative Petersburg's been involved as well, and you forged some consensus in an issue I never thought we would be able to do that. So thank you, thank you, thank you for the heavy lifting you've done. And I think we do have a bill that we can all be proud of, and we want to make a few small adjustments here in committee before we send this on to Commerce. So I think our first item of business will be to take a look at the A1 amendment. This is an amendment that will get the bill in the shape that the author would like. I would like to move the A1, and if you want to explain that amendment, and we'll also call on Mr. Burris for any additional clarifications, we'll be ready to roll with the bill. Representative Joachim, welcome. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing House File 3296. As you noted, this bill is a product of a lot of work done by many stakeholders and the legislators on the working group over the course of the last several sessions. So the A1 amendment makes technical changes that the stakeholders agreed to that uphold the transparency for the consumer in the bill and clean up some underlying salvage title profit process language. So if Mr. Burris wants to delve a little bit deeper into those changes, I would turn it over to him.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, so the A1 amendment has, as Representative Joachim noted, some technical changes. There are a series of clarifying items. One is on the definition of one of the terms that is being established in the bill. There is some clarification on when a salvage title is not required, or a prior salvage title is not required for some vehicles that are stolen and then recovered again. It also allows for stamping of a certificate of title with prior salvage. This is parallel to a stamping process that's allowed under current law for salvage titles or titles with that would gain a salvage stamp. That's instead of going through the application process with the department. There are some conforming changes that relate to that stamp to clarify brands or stamps that kind of work in effect the same way under the statutes. There's a clarification about oral disclosure so that a verbal disclosure isn't required in situations of online sales of vehicles. And there are a couple of phrasing changes to clarify about disclosure involving flooding, as well as only requiring disclosure on the part of dealers if there's actual knowledge of a brand. And that, Mr. Chair, is the A1 amendment in a nutshell.
Thanks so much, Mr. Burris. Thanks for that excellent summation. Is there any discussion, members of the A1 amendment? I do not see any. So with that, we'll just take a vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. And we do now have House File 3296 as amended before us. Now, members, there is one other sort of technical small amendment that I think is needed here. There is a fiscal note for House File 3296, which you have included in your packets. And with the adoption of the A1, I just want to make sure that there's no additional cost for DVS. I understand that there isn't, but we'd like to have someone from DVS confirm that the A1 amendment does not have any added cost. So I know we have Mr. Zhang, and, Mr. Zhang, if you could come before us and indicate your perspective on this amendment.
I don't have a fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record. Wonderful to see you again.
Yes, thank you very much. Pong Zhang, Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And yes, to answer the question about the, thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. To answer that question, there will be no additional fiscal costs to the amendment or from the amendment, and again, in totality, no fiscal impact to implement this proposal. And if I could, I'll just take this moment to thank the task force and Representative Joachim, Representative Petersburg, and all the members of the task force for all their great work on this. We are very confident that this will close a lot of the challenges and loopholes that will allow us to have to brand titles appropriately. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Zhang, and thank you for your involvement with the task force as well. Okay, members, well, with that information, I think we can move what I would consider to be a non-controversial oral amendment here. And that would be to delete the section that includes an appropriation. I believe that is section 13 of the bill on page 10. So, Mr. Burris, can you confirm that oral amendment would be in order to delete the appropriation, or not in order, but maybe you just explain exactly what we're doing here?
Mr. Chair,
and Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chair and members, so for an oral amendment, I have page 10, delete section 13, and that would remove the appropriation section, and it's standalone, so there aren't any other tendrils in the bill that would be impacted by that.
Excellent. Okay. I did see Representative Petersburg's hand up at one time. Representative Petersburg, did you still want to comment? Your hand is down now. So,
actually, I was going to comment on the final bill, but I agree with your oral amendment. I think that's it's a good one. It's not necessary. It could have stayed in with zero and just taken out later, but it's fine to remove it now.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you for that, Representative Petersburg. Is there any further discussion to the oral amendment? Seeing none, then all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, the motion prevails. So we have our bill as amended before us, House File 3296, and we are in the shape that the author would like us to consider the bill. So with that, Representative Joachim, if you wanted to make any additional comments, those would be very much appreciated, and we have a few testifiers, and then we'll proceed to a discussion after that. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you noted in last year's transportation omnibus bill, a salvage title task force was created. Both myself and Representative Petersburg served in the House, and Senator Jasinski and Senator Carlson were appointed in the Senate. Senator Jasinski chaired the committee, and we got a lot of work done. We met as a working group 7 times during the interim. We received helpful input from stakeholders, directions from the Department of Public Safety, and the bill before you is the product of those meetings and conversations. You also have a final report from the working group in your packets. It's scintillating reading, if you would like. And I also want to say a special thank you to Mr. Lucina for all the work that he put in to this task force and all the help and guidance he gave us. In short, the core policy changes in the bill are to address title washing loopholes by requiring a salvage or prior salvage brand on all vehicles that are acquired by an insurance company as a total loss or that encourage damage over 80% of the vehicle value threshold, require written notice, written disclosure of vehicle brands, flooding, or other prior damage, extend the title branding and disclosure requirements to commercial vehicles as well as motorcycles. The changes eliminate scenarios where a vehicle that is neither high value nor late model can end up with a clear title, as well as treat in-state and out-of-state vehicles in a consistent manner. The changes also require disclosures that will aid consumers as they navigate purchasing damaged yet roadworthy vehicles. And more importantly, it ensures the agreement reached by the insurance industry and auto repair shops over the years related to high value and late model cars remain a viable definition of a salvage vehicle, while at the same time allowing for more clarity for cars that fall outside that agreement's measure. A wide range of changes throughout the bill involve readability, clarity in the flow of statutes on title branding. Some of those are in that A1, the amendment we just passed. They're based on suggestions and several discussions with the Department of Vehicle Services. This includes revising definitions, eliminating distinctions that are no longer necessary, and more clearly separating the brand requirements that happen in like 2 different sections of law, 168A.151 and 325F.6642. Brand provisions are further centralized as well. With that, Mr. Chair and members, I think everyone involved in the working group appreciated the complex nature of this area of law. The working group chaired by Senator Jasinski did a great deal of work, and I think the progress made to get this language will aid consumers and strengthen our statutes, making the system work better for all of us. So I would welcome any comments from my colleague, Representative Petersburg, and then move it over to testifiers. We have Ron Elwood from Legal Aid and Pong Zhang, Director of Department and Vehicle Services. I also have a few of the stakeholders and other experts online who can answer more technical questions as well.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and also I want to welcome you back to the committee that you've served on for so many years. It's wonderful to have you back. Representative Petersburg, did you want to make any comments?
Oh, yeah, I certainly can. I'll make my comments now, and I'll leave anything to later. But yes, I think this was a situation where we actually were looking for a way to help with consumers, especially those that were buying lower-priced vehicles, make sure that they had full disclosure on the damage to their vehicles so that they were aware of what's going on and they can make the decisions themselves. We wanted to get away from my ideas or places in which there was damage to a vehicle and unsuspecting buyers buy it, and then it became unusable later. The bill also, as we started working on it, found many issues from out-of-state vehicles that are coming in that were still of an issue. And I think this bill corrects all of those as well. So just as our Representative Joachim said, we had a lot of people working on this. And finally, it came down to an agreement that fell in place. And I also want to thank everybody for the hard work. And so I'd certainly open it up for questions as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Members, let's thank you, Representative Petersburg. Thank you for your service on this task force. We were really able to. It's a tough issue, and you know, the ability, your leadership and Chair Youakim's leadership was so critical, and of course our Senate partners as well, to getting to consensus. This has been vexing for a number of years, and so it's really a great day. I feel really, really great about the work that you've accomplished. So members, what we'll do is, I have again, as Representative Youakim said, we have Ron Elwood and Pong Zhang lined up to testify. We'll take their testimony and then we'll move into discussion of the bill. Mr. Elwood, welcome back to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. And first, I also want to thank Representative Youakim and Representative Petersburg. As Chair Hornstein noted, this salvage title issue has been around for many, many years. And while there was general agreement on the broad goals, a global solution was elusive. But due to Chair Youakim and Representative Petersburg's unflagging efforts to tackle this issue and bring the stakeholders together, they were able to fashion a solution everyone could coalesce around. And their efforts and the contributions of all stakeholders has borne fruit in the form of House File 3296 and the amendments that you adopted, which I urge you to pass, and I'm sure you all will. I really also want to recognize the tremendous assistance and expert information provided by the DVS staff all through the process. They are to be commended and thanked. You know, when you can get the auto auctions, the repair shops, the auto dealers, the parts dealers, the insurance federation, and legal aid all to get behind the bill, that's saying something, quite an accomplishment. But seriously, this bill represents an important and long in coming advancement in transparency and consumer protection. At its core, as Representative Petersburg noted, this bill and its progenitors were aimed at giving consumers the information they need and deserve about a car they are contemplating purchasing in order to allow them to make an informed decision. This bill will not only help legal aid's clients when they are shopping for a car, but will also help all consumers when they are in market for a new or used vehicle. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3296.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood, and I want to personally thank you as well. You've been at this for a while, and I know that you know, your heart is where many of us are in protecting consumers. I mean, I think that's a bottom line, and really appreciate, again, your ability to work with everybody and get consensus. So thank you so much. Now we're back to Mr. Zhang. Welcome back, and please proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Pong Zhang, Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And again, I just want to thank the task force and convey my genuine appreciation for the opportunity to support the task force. I've heard just numerous comments on the support that specifically Mr. Lucina was able to provide, and we're very happy to be able to offer that support. And I'm also very thankful to Mr. Lucina. DVS is very confident that the proposal here will create the transparency needed in titling and branding. And we're very encouraged by the unanimous support around, or the large support around this effort. So thank you again, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Zhang. Now, members, any discussion to the bill and or questions of the testifiers? Okay, I'm going to scan the one more time here before we vote. Well, okay, I don't see any additional discussion, Representative Youakim. So if you want to make any closing statements, now is a good time to do that. And or if there's any other of the stakeholders that wanted to say anything, we can certainly hear your testimony now. I don't see anyone with their hand up. So appreciate them as well. Representative Youakim, Chairperson Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a good bill. I just appreciate your support.
All righty. Well, members, I will renew my motion that House File 3296, as amended, be re-referred to the Commerce Committee. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
Mason, aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy? Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Olson, aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson is excused. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
West, aye.
West, aye. There are 16 ayes and 0 nays.
All right. Well, good work, Representative Joachim. We are you are headed to Commerce, and we look forward to seeing this bill on the floor soon. And again, with much appreciation for the time and effort you put in. It takes a special member to bring everyone together, and it's very much appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do miss transportation. So thank you.
We miss you. So thanks again for your work. Members, we have one more bill on the agenda, and then we'll have an informational session on corridors of commerce. Our next bill comes to us from Representative Cagle. And Representative Cagle, we are going to lay this bill over. We're not taking action. I will make a couple of comments, and then you can proceed with your bill testimony, and I know you have an amendment as well. But members, this is, again, a work in progress. We have had increasing numbers of requests for special plates. I know that one of my predecessors who chaired this committee wouldn't even hear these kinds of bills. I think since then, you know, we've had several chairs that have heard these bills, myself included. But we are just seeing increasing numbers of requests. While I understand why this is and why people want special plates, it is really taking quite a bit of committee time. And I think there have been members in the past that have pointed this out. And we're searching this is no opposition to special plates. It's simply an effort to see if we can streamline the process for requesting special plates. Representative Cagle has an idea she will share with us. I've had a conversation with Representative Petersburg. He's got some thoughts on this question. So keep in mind, this is just an initial conversation we're having as a committee to reform this process, to make it more efficient, both for people who are requesting special plates, for the agencies that have to issue them, and for all of us. So I appreciate Representative Cagle, Vice Chair Cagle, that you have taken this on, and please tell us about House File 3168. Again, the motion is simply to lay this bill over. I imagine we'll be revisiting it. Many issues and questions will arise today. So again, members, we're not here to you know, critique this bill per se, maybe offer some constructive thoughts and advice. And I know that Vice Chair Cagle will take those to heart, and we can come back with a more finished product as we move forward in this session. So with that introduction, Representative Cagle, please proceed with a description of your bill and the amendment that you would like us to consider.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So this is a bill that would allow DPS to do this specialty plate instead of having to come to the legislature for us to approve it. And so what this does is it establishes the authority for DPS to basically approve and discontinue some of these plates. It also eases the some of the accessibility issues, I believe, that that we've seen. You know, it's an expensive process to get these plates, the applications in. And so the main goal of this is to really, streamline the process, make it more accessible to people. And I think, you know, kind of the historical aspect of this is, the technology that we use to print our plates is changing, has changed. And so the cost of these specialty plates has been decreasing. And so what this would do is do you want me just to walk through the bill, or can we adopt the amendment first?
Yeah, let's thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. Let's adopt your amendment first, and then we can consider your bill as amended. So if you wanted to explain, it looks like you have an A1 amendment.
Yeah, so the A1 amendment puts in some of the numbers that we were missing in the dot, dot, dot. So on line 2.20, we would have at least 1,000 eligible motor vehicles who are very likely to, and I don't, maybe it'd be easier if Mr. Burris ran through the amendment.
Sure. Mr. Burris, do you want to walk us through the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, so as was mentioned, there are a series of changes. The first set of changes is spread a little bit throughout the amendment, but it involves a modification to how plate design would work. You see this beginning on 1.3 of the amendment, and that would shift plate design so that instead of it occurring after approval of a proposed special plate, a proposed design or design concept and a proposed inscription would be submitted as part of the plate application. So there's a little bit here in the amendment and then a little bit later in the amendment that eliminates current law around submission of design concepts. The second change, as was just mentioned, is filling in the threshold as part of the application process to propose a special plate for a number of eligible vehicle owners who would be intending or very likely to obtain the plate to put 1,000 as that threshold. The next change on 1.7 is to set the application fee at $5,000. And then starting on 1.8 of the amendment, there is another kind of set of changes that center around providing more information and guidance to the department on its establishment of standards for whether a plate would be accepted or approved. So what's in the original bill are a set of criteria, kind of general criteria for approval of plates. The amendment adds some additional considerations that the department would look at in determining whether a proposed plate is controversial in nature. So it sets some considerations, and one of those is based on a public comment process that's also being established in the amendment. So when a plate application occurs, the department would go through a process of providing public notice and have a period for comments, would then collect those comments and use that as part of its considerations to judge or determine whether there's some violation of the standards for approval of the plate. The next change is on 1.15 of the amendment, and this raises the maximum contribution amount if the plate proposer seeks to include a donation element. The amount would be up to $60 annually, and that matches the highest of the special plates that are in current law. And then the bottom of page one is that public notice and comment process that I had mentioned. And then there is another series of changes at the top of page two that go back to the plate design process and consultation between the plate proposer and the department on the plate design and the inscription. After that, there is another insertion at 2.13 of the Sorry, I just need to double check what that one is. Oh, that's the threshold for discontinuance of special plates. So in current law, there's a 1,000 plate minimum for some special plates that have been established in statute. That's not a provision that actually applies to all plates. That's kind of a subset of, generally speaking, the more recently created plates, ones that have been established in law in about since about 2010, plus a couple others. This revises that threshold for when a plate would be discontinued. So it's dropped from 1,000 down to 500. And then finally, there is some clarifying language and another section being added. And this is starting at 2.15 of the amendment. This is to clarify the process for plate applicants that have already submitted an application to the department. Or will have already submitted an application prior to enactment of this change. So it establishes that application serves as the application and that the revised requirements wouldn't cause a requester to need to reapply when this goes into effect, if it were to be enacted. This has a delayed effective date of January 2023. So that, Mr. Chair, I think covers the core of the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. And so members, we're just gonna be voting to adopt this amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like us to consider it. So I'll move the A1 amendment. Members, is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All of those opposed, the motion prevails. And now we have House File 3168 as amended before us. Vice Chair Cagle.
So this would allow DPS to, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, this would just allow DPS to be the ones that are really spearheading this process. Well, it's driven by, you know, the people of Minnesota, but they would be the ones to approve it, so it would no longer have to come in front of the legislature.
Thank you. And I have a question from Representative Houseman. Representative Houseman, Chair Houseman, you probably know the particular chair of the Transportation Committee that I was referring to. Representative Houseman, proceed with your question or comment.
Yes, mine is a comment. A reminder of past history and a reminder of Representative Bernie Leader. I feel sort of obligated to be part of his voice today. Anytime you go down the road of, I would categorize this in the same area as earmarks. When you start doing something for one, how can you ever say no to anyone? And here's what I recall in the early years when we first started down this road. Yes, Representative Leader strongly opposed these. And I remember that law enforcement would come and testify against it because of the importance of quickly and clearly seeing numbers on a license plate. And they warned us about something like this. And I don't know if this one was a joke, but I saw recently whatever we approved last year. I'm sorry if I'm putting the wrong group at fault here, but it was at 4-H. There was so much stuff on that plate that they were designing. It obscured the numbers. And that's what I recall, that law enforcement worried that if we start mucking up the plate, that it's going to cause a problem with quickly and clearly being able to read those numbers. I just feel like for the sake of Representative Leader and past history that this used to be controversial. It's so hard for us to say no. And I don't know. I mean, yes, we're shifting the responsibility to another entity, but whether anyone will be able to put some boundaries on what we're doing is the thing that concerns me. I don't even know if law enforcement is in the room right now.
Representative Houseman, we don't have, thank you for your comments, by the way. We don't have public testimony lined up. And again, this is, we're having a preliminary discussion. And I know that Vice Chair Cagle is interested in hearing people's thoughts and you know, she'll go back and take those to heart and we'll see if we proceed with this later on. And we're hearing this now, members, because I Vice Chair Cagle will acknowledge, I will acknowledge it needs some work. we have creative people on this committee. We have creative ideas. And a reminder also that to get your bills in, because, you know, our deadlines are rapidly approaching. So that's why we're hearing this preliminarily today. Representative Torkelson, then Representative Petersburg, then Representative Mason. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just thought I should throw in my two cents worth. I certainly share some of Representative Hausman's concerns. The concern I would like to highlight is we've had a recent proposal that I believe kind of crosses a line into the commercial side of the world. I don't think we want to start using our license plate system as advertising for those who may benefit commercially from seeing their logo displayed on cars across the state of Minnesota. I'm not going to name names, Mr. Chair, but that's my two cents worth.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Appreciate your comments. We'll have Representative Petersburg, then Representative Mason.
Well, Chair Torkelson gave you his two cents worth, and if it's a penny for my thoughts, I'm not sure who gets the extra penny, but we'll keep moving forward with that. I agree that that this has become kind of overwhelming, and we spend a lot of committee time doing this. However, I also look at what is, in reality, what are we doing with these license plates? But I think, in essence, how it's endorsing whatever is on that license plate. I mean, it is a state licensed and provided by the state to put on each vehicle. And so there is some, I think, responsibility that the state has to make sure that whatever is on these plates has some value. And so at first, I thought this was a great idea to have somebody else take it away so we don't need to do it. As I reviewed and realized, you know, we should keep some responsibility for overseeing that. Another idea that I had to kind of streamline this whole process was, what if we were to have a standing, call it a subcommittee of a representative, DFL and GOP, and a Senate GOP and DFL member, four-member committee that would meet the first year of the biennium, say at the end of February, in which all the bills for this would be filtered through them. And then they would review, they'd have an opportunity for everybody who wanted to testify for each of the bills and the license plates. And you would then have that committee submit their report to the full committee, transportation committee, which would then have full oversight or review on ones that they may choose to accept or not accept through committee hearing. It would allow us to streamline the process while still keeping the authority to make sure that we keep license plates with messages and so forth under our control as well. That was just an idea I thought of over the last couple of days when I was thinking about this. It's another alternative, something else that we could do. But I just think handing over to a state agency to make that decision kind of creates a little bit of a usurping our responsibility. And I think something that we still need to maintain and be kind of the watch guard for that. So, Mr. Chair, that's my penny for my thoughts.
Well, thanks. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Representative Cagle. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. That's actually something that DVS actually echoed as well. And so we kind of looked at that through the public comment period. That's why we added that piece. And then there is a report that was generated to the legislature every year. And I believe the amendment also had a place where we could, where it got kicked. My desk is not big enough for all this paper. but there was some concern from DPS on that very issue. And so they kind of suggested something along the lines of, you know, if there's any kind of controversy, it would get kicked up to the legislature. But I kind of like the idea, too, of legislators maybe serving on that little board or task force or whatever it is. And, you know, once a year you come with a report that says, here's the ones we recommend.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And you know, that sounds good, but I could tell you from experience dealing with the task force, dealing with distribution of highway funds, sometimes the agency's view of what is controversial and what the legislature's view of controversial may be different. And once you give it to an agency, it's their determination of what becomes controversial. And then, again, the legislature only deals with it after the fact. And so I think keeping the streamlined process into the legislature is better than having just a report coming after the fact. But that's, again, that's the debate. That's part of what I would see as a little bit of a caution that we should at least make sure we are understanding what those ramifications are. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburgo, and thank you. It's a creative idea. I know you shared it with me the other day, and I appreciated that. Maybe that has, you know, that type of arrangement can also sift out some of these requests, such as the one that Representative Torkelson referred to. And then this committee would kind of propose almost like a slate, if you will, to the broader committee. So I think there's some definite advantages to that. And, you know, that this is exactly the kind of ideas that we'd like to start talking about. Representative Mason and Representative Koznick, and then I think we'll be close to wrapping up this bill. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I too have some concern about all the decorative plates. I mean, the point is, why do we have the plates in the first place? And what are they achieving that particular purpose? And I know I have been looking at plates, a lot of pretty plates we have now, but usually you have to be on top of the car to read through all this stuff to figure out what state it's from. And most of the decorative plates seem to be from Minnesota versus, and I guess one question I have is, how many other states have allow all this decoration on the plates? But again, my concern is, why are we having, yeah, what is the purpose of the plates? And are we making it really difficult for that purpose to be, is that working when we put all the extra stuff on it? And I would like to add one thing. I don't know if it would be appropriate, but I had two times now where I've had you have a car for 7 years and you have to get new plates. My plates are still in really good condition. So can you add, like, making it 8 or 9 years or something? Because there's really no purpose in just changing plates just for the heck of it. I mean, at least in my opinion. So hopefully that's clear. It's just, are we doing the right thing for having the plates? Otherwise, if it's mainly for decoration now, I don't know if we can really justify the money being spent. Thank you.
Thank you for your perspective, Representative Mason. Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Cagle. I appreciate the efforts of this bill and read it when it was first introduced. I think your amendments add some good provisions in there in terms of figuring out when to decommission plates. I'm of the camp that we have way too many specialty plates. I'm not a big fan of all the particular extra plates, but you know, they're all generally very good organizations or such that are asking for them. I appreciate Representative Hausman's comments in reference to the law enforcement, trying to have it standardized a little bit more. And so I think we're on to something, a good topic that we need to figure out. My caution and concern is giving legislative authority to the administrative branch. I personally have big issues with ceding more and more control to an agency or just the executive branch. And so I think the intent is I would agree with, but that's the big problem I have. I would like to see maybe the committee establish more stringent boundaries of when we do any of those plates, if we should do any more at all, and at what point do we stop doing plates that aren't really being used and functioned. And there was another bill currently in the legislature that will be used to fund an agency of a newly created board, and I have I don't know how that will work out for them, but I also don't I'm not real comfortable with that funding mechanism for a newly created board as well. So I appreciate bringing this bill forward and working on it. If be happy to work with you offline as you work through it, but I appreciate having this hearing and taking some considerations. I think we all recognize the issue, and I prefer not to sit here in committee and hear so many of these issues. It puts us in a bad position to say, oh, we don't support this group or that group, but really what it is what's the proper purpose of a license rather than approving of a group or not. And, you know, many of them are very popular groups, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's they should have a special license plate. And it gets hard to say no to the 4-H'ers, for instance, or any other group that's in all other respects, there is no controversy. So thank you for bringing this discussion forward, and I stand available to you as you work on that, to work through some of these issues. Thank you.
Thanks, Representative Koznick. I appreciate your very constructive and thoughtful comments. And I do not see any additional hands up. And so it sounds like, Representative Cagle, you're on to something, and you've got some members that are willing to help you. And I think that's a good sign. And I just wanted to see if you had any final comments. Again, members, we're not voting. We're just simply going to lay this bill over and see what other ideas can percolate here. But I know we have a lot of interest and support for your efforts. And, you know, I think it's just a question of figuring out what we can come up with that both streamlines the process, but what I'm hearing is maintain some legislative oversight or control. So with that, Representative Cagle, do you have any final thoughts or comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think some of the ideas I wrote down was kind of a plate slate.
Oh, wow. You know, you've already got the soundbite. I like that.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe we can have some sort of, you know, DPS overview process, and then the plate slate would come to us. Another idea that I kind of heard was maybe capping the amount of specialty plates. So as some get decommissioned, that allows more spots for other ones to come into. That was just kind of a note I wrote down. Also with the design of plates, maybe we can have some sort of like standardized form. So there's only one thing on the plate that changes, and that's the logo or whatever it is. And so I think, you know, just through this process, getting some good ideas of how we can refine this bill and change it so that, you know, we still, you know, the thing I'm hearing is that we should still have legislative control, but we definitely don't want to have, you know, every specialty plate coming before the legislature. And so I am very willing to work with any legislator who is interested. And I would definitely like to also bring in law enforcement. And I know I did work with DVS as well when drafting some of these amendments and getting feedback. So I am definitely willing to make this a collaborative process and hope eventually we can get something that we can agree on. So thank you all.
Thanks so much, Vice Chair Cagle. And to the members that spoke, very helpful comments. And I'm confident we can move forward and make some needed reforms to this process. Okay, members, so again, we are laying over House File 3168 as amended, and we'll potentially revisit this when we put together our committee bill. So, members, we have one final item on the agenda, and it's an important one. We have had at least one member, and I think several others over the years have asked to get an overview of the Corridors for Commerce Corridors of Commerce program. You know, we have a number of new members, and this has been referred to, I think, maybe mentioned quickly in a MnDOT overview last year, but we haven't really taken a deep dive as a committee recently on this program. And No, I was involved in its inception in 2013, and I think the goal was to, we had so many different highways that had, for many, many years, had been advocated for. They were good projects. They enhanced commerce in many instances, but we didn't really have a mechanism to get them funded and separated out as particularly high priority projects, you know, within the MnDOT project selection. So this program was created. It's been very successful. You know, we've finished Highway 23. We've made a lot of progress on Highway 14. There's a number of others that are, you know, if you've been on this committee for a while, you can kind of recite these highways and their numbers in your sleep. Over the years, you know, there have been some issues have arisen. I think it's time now, almost 10 years into the program, that the legislature take another look at the program and see what needs to be changed, what needs to be reformed, whether it's regional balance, whether it's the criteria for selection. And I appreciate the fact that Representative Torkelson has taken this on. He is, you know, also been very involved in the program since its inception, has offered many constructive comments over the years. And so there will be potentially a bill coming with some changes to the program that will come before us before deadline. But in preparation for consideration of that legislation, I thought it'd be really important for us to get an overview of the program, both get some of Representative Torkelson's thoughts, and then we'll hear from MnDOT about just giving us sort of Corridors of Commerce 101, so that when we really dig into the potential legislation on this, we'll have some background and everybody will be on the same page in terms of their knowledge of the program. So that's what we want to do here in the next 38 minutes or so. And I will, at this point, call on Representative Torkelson to introduce the topic to us as a committee, maybe give us some of his preliminary thoughts, and then we'll have an overview presentation from MnDOT. So Representative Torkelson, thank you for your work on this.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your kind words and your introduction to what I've been working on for a while. Corridors, I believe, is an extremely valuable program that has taken on a bit of life of its own, so to speak. I don't think it's going away, but it's also had a bit of a bumpy ride for various reasons through the time that it's been in place. My objective with this work is to improve the program, make it useful and important, because I believe that if the program is in good shape and we as legislators trust that our investments in corridors are well used, it's more likely that the program will be funded. And as everyone on this committee, I think, understands, accessing funds for transportation is always a challenge. This particular route for funding projects, as I said, has been successful in the past, and it can be even more successful in the future if it's well constructed and supported by legislators on both sides of the street. The department has been working on some of their ideas, and many of them are good ideas. I know they've been gone around the state to the various ATPs and presented both the history of the program and some of their legislative ideas, and I look forward to their presentation today, and I'll have some. We'll go through my ideas after they've presented their review and their own ideas. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Rep. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. And with that, we have two folks from MnDOT here with us today, Mr. Rudin and Mr. Wiedemann. And I, you know, I'm not sure, Mr. Rudin, did you want to start us off, and then, or is it Mr. Wiedemann, whoever? But welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
So I will go first, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Welcome to the committee. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Wiedemann. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, I'm Patrick Weideman. I'm with MnDOT's
Office
of
Transportation.
That's fine. I don't worry about it. Yeah. With MnDOT's Office of Transportation System Management, and my section is responsible for oversight and management of this program. And so Eric and I are gonna go through today, give you a little bit of background about the program, some issues that come up, and then Eric will come in and talk about some future ideas we have. So next slide. A little bit of legislative history. As Chair Hornstein stated, the program was initiated in 2013. The legislature provided $300 million in bonds to fund it. The priority at that time was to get projects in the ground and construction. We had a big list of things that were behind. And then in 2014, the legislature provided a $6.5 million only for Greater Minnesota. That was part of a legislative agreement deal. And the priority for that was to get projects ready for potential future funding of Corridors of Commerce that didn't necessarily get funded, you know, from the 2013 funding. In 2015, we also received $25 million in funds. 50% of it was marked for Greater Minnesota and 50% for the metro area. And again, the priority of that and goal of that funding was to get projects ready on the shelf for future funding from COC. Next slide. In 2017, the legislature provided another $300 million in bonds along with $25 million annually in trunk highway cash. But as part of that in 2017, there also were changes to the program and how it operates in response to the 2016 Legislative Auditor's Report on MnDOT's project selection process. And that's gonna come into play in a little while later. In 2018, there was another $400 million in bonds provided to the program. The priority for that area was established in the actual special session criteria in the law, so that had very distinct criteria for which projects could receive funding. And then in 2021, during the special session, there was $200 million in bonds provided last time, and with a requirement that MnDOT begin the solicitation by August 1st of this year. Next slide. The 2017 legislative changes, again, these were in response to the legislative auditor's report. Number one, it required MnDOT to score and rank all of the projects that were submitted to it as project recommendations using only the 8 evaluation criteria in law. Not adding anything, not subtracting anything, no screens, no nothing. We had to use just those, and we had to use all 8. We were prohibited from considering project deliverability as a criteria. That's something we had used in 2013 on the ability to deliver. And then we clarified that that MnDOT must accept project recommendations from the Area Transportation Partnership and other interested stakeholders. That whenever we go out and are going to, we receive funding, we need to physically go out and take those recommendations. Those were all contained within the changes in 2017 when that funding was passed. Next. So here's some quick samples of the projects. These are not all of them, by the way. We do have a report out that I believe was available in your packet that will show you all the projects, but just as a sampling, in 2013, a couple of the projects that were funded were Highway 14 from Nicollet to North Mankato and the Highway 610 freeway completion on the north side. In 2014, Highway 34 up near Detroit Lakes, there was the installation of a center turn lane for freight movement. Highway 23 had some environmental work done for the Richmond to New London expansion. In 2015, we had some preliminary design for the intersection of Highway 15 and Highway 14, if you're familiar with that. And I-35W, the preliminary design for the interchange with Interstate 494. From 2017, these are the actual 4 projects that were selected in 2017. The I-94 project, which was to expand to 6 lanes from Rogers to St. Michael. Highway 169, convert to a freeway in Elk River. I-35W, expand the interchange with I-494 to make a turbine-style interchange. And on I-494, add the easy pass, or it's time min pass, from France Avenue to Highway 77. And then in 2018, as I mentioned, those were projects that were kind of set up as being scored before in 2017. And those projects were New London to Richmond, expand to 4 lanes. Highway 14 Owatonna to Dodge Center, expand to four lanes, and Highway 252 convert to a freeway and easy pass Dowling to Highway 610. So, issues with the current process. The number one is the number of projects needing evaluation. In 2017, we received 173 unique project recommendations. Because of the change in the 2017 law, MnDOT is required to evaluate, develop, estimate, and score all of those projects. That required a significant amount of time and effort on the part of both, you know, MnDOT's own internal staff, as well as all of our local agencies and partners, as we had to go through each one of these individual projects and kind of get it to a level where we felt comfortable enough that we could score and rank it. The next issue that we've been experiencing has been the interpretation of regional balance. In 2017, we utilized a historical soft kind of 50-50 approach to regional balance. And what that really means is that for the metro district area of MnDOT, which is the eight counties, the seven county metro area plus Chisago, we would approximately get 50% of the funds to that area and then 50% for the remainder of the state. After the announcement in 2017 of the actual winning projects, there was significant pushback as to our interpretation of regional balance. Next slide. Again, these are the projects that were selected in 2017. I-494 and I-494-35W, there was no issue with that at all. They were very much clearly metro projects. However, Trunk Highway 169 in Elk River and the I-94 St. Michael to Albertville, they are all in District 3, which is in our greater Minnesota district, but there was a lot of criticism that that is a unique interpretation of regional balance. And so because of the amount of pushback we received, we felt that that is something that is very much needing to be clarified. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Eric.
Thank you so much, Mr. Weideman. That was really, really helpful. Mr. Rudin, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs, and I will take some of the background that Patrick has laid out and try to present some of the proposals that we're bringing forward for improving the program. So the first one gets to that issue that Patrick highlighted about currently being required to score every project that's submitted. And so what we're proposing is that we have sort of an additional step in that process, and our proposal would ask the area transportation partnerships to help us screen down the number of projects that are recommended. So, for example, maybe each ATP in Greater Minnesota would select sort of their three top projects, and then those three would go through the full scoring process, and that would help, you know, limit the number of projects, obviously, that we would have to take through that full process, which, as Patrick highlighted, can be rather extensive. He also highlighted the challenge we've had with regional balance. And so we are proposing that the legislature put a definition in the statute of what regional balance means. And our proposal is to have approximately half the funds be spent in the MnDOT Metro District and then half in Greater Minnesota. But I will say that we are very open to other definitions of regional balance. I think we would even maybe say we're agnostic about what that definition should be. We would just like some sort of legislative guidance in that area so that when we do future solicitations, we have something that we can rely on. And then we're also proposing to create a small projects category. This, again, I think would help us get to the regional balance challenge that we've had. If we created a small projects category for projects under $10 million, we could do some of those smaller type projects. Again, we're proposing 25%. That would go into a small projects category, but you know, hopefully this would help us distribute more projects all around the states. And so, you know, we are certainly working with Representative Torkelson. We appreciate his input on some of these proposals. We've also gotten some feedback from the Met Council. You know, we've certainly been talking to lots of local officials as well. And although we, as the department, have brought a proposal forward, you know, I don't know that we're particularly committed to the specifics. We would just really like to see some changes before we have to begin that solicitation process for the $200 million that last year's legislature already authorized, so that we don't have some of these challenges that we've seen, especially recently, with administering the program. So, with that, Mr. Chair, that's kind of a high-level overview of some of the challenges we've seen and some of the proposals that we would have for trying to address those challenges.
Thank you so much, Mr. Rudin. Thank you very much, Mr. Weideman. Representative Torkelson, I know you have some thoughts to share as well. Why don't we do that, and then we can sort of take member questions and of all three of the folks that have made presentations today. So, Representative Torkelson, I'm already seeing some fruits to your labor potentially here with this MnDOT presentation, but if you wanted to maybe share a little bit more about what you're thinking with the committee, that would be great.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to both Mr. Rudin and Mr. Weideman for their work on this topic. They've spent a lot of time thinking about it and working on it. We've had quite a few discussions over the last number of months as we kind of try to bring focus on to how we may improve this program. I'd also point out in members' packets, there is a letter from the Transportation Alliance. I've also been in contact with them on a regular basis. They have some good ideas in their letter that I think certainly are worthy of consideration. And we will, as we work toward actual bill language, we will certainly consider their ideas too. And the door is open, frankly. I'm really trying to be very receptive to others' ideas in this process, including the department and eventually perhaps the other body across the street, and see if we can't come up with something that we have confidence that will be a good program moving forward. It's always subject to revision in the future too, but let's see if we can get a good improve on the foundation. So in your packets, there's also a document, my document, that is titled Revising Corridors of Commerce. It's really just a series of bullet points that kind of summarizes some of my ideas. None of this is written in stone at this point. It's still being noodled on and revised. So if members have ideas of their own, please contact me and let me know what you're thinking, and we'll try to have a good collaborative process. Bullet point one, staying focused on projects on the interregional corridor system. And there is a map. I don't have a copy available, but I know the department has a map of the corridor system. And my understanding is that all the projects to date have been part of that system. So it's not like we're looking at every road in the state. We're looking at a network of roads that has really been identified as the corridors of commerce. And I went to the original language, impact on improving capacity and facilitating the movement of freight. That's how the program started, and I believe that's still a good theme for corridors of commerce. I personally am not, I understand the reasoning behind the $10 million small project idea. I just am afraid that whatever number we pick, it's somewhat arbitrary to define small versus large. I don't see any reason why both small and large projects could not be submitted to the process for evaluation and let the ATPs or other projects proposers decide which projects they think are important, regardless of the size of the project. The other question that I'm really struggling with is the one of legislative input. Those of us that have been around here a while know that end of session negotiations often involve the discussion of earmarks. Many of us, past chairs and others, have been opposed to earmarks, including myself and the current chair, Representative Hornstein. I believe I'm not putting words in your mouth. But there are others who think that earmarks are appropriate, where legislators actually pick projects and say, DOT, you're going to fund this, period. I don't think that's a good idea. I think it potentially leads us to a path where we have a point in the session where everybody has their map out and is picking out their favorite project, and then those with the most political power in transportation get theirs funded and others are ignored. That's just not appropriate. There are better ways to do this work. But at the same time, I believe corridors presents us with an opportunity to build legislative input into the process so that legislators do feel they do have an influence on project selection. And that is important, because if legislators have input, significant input, I think it's more likely that the program will be supported and funded as we move forward. I kind of imagine this as being at two different levels within the process. The first level is when projects are proposed. Some of those projects are fully vetted, and some of those are just ideas. And legislators should have input, and working through the ATP system that the department has identified, where legislators could work with their regional ATPs to select a limited number of projects, I think is a good idea. But then there's also the point in the process where projects are actually selected. I think there should be a way where we can have limited legislative input at that end of the process too, where we've actually picking the projects that are going to be funded with corridors funds. Not that the legislators would necessarily have veto power, but that they would have some form of input into how those final projects are selected. We've had some issues with projects being selected that were really not fully vetted. We didn't really know what the price tag was. And when you pick a project that has a undervalued price tag on it, and you get into designing the project and find out it's much more expensive than expected, that puts a real strain on the system as to where those extra funds might be found. So we need to make sure that the projects that make it to the list are projects that we have a pretty good understanding of what their scope and cost is. I'm also suggesting, when I say here that submitted projects must be discrete, what I'm saying is we should avoid what happened in that last major allocation, where we had some proposals where they'd propose a piece of a project as one project, and then they'd include that same piece in a larger project and submit it a second time. That caused a lot of extra work for the department to try and evaluate projects in a piecemeal fashion, and just not a good idea. There's a date in the current legislation of August 1st, 2022. If we're going to make significant changes in the program, I think we need to extend the amount of time available for the department to work through this process with the ATPs and put together a final list. And we will work with the department to try and pick a date that is appropriate so they can do their work in a timely fashion. Then we get to the question of regional balance. I'm sure many of you remember the map that came out when we had what I describe as the blueberry in a very large bowl of tomato soup, where the projects were in and centered around the metropolitan part of the state. And it upset me personally, and I think it upset a lot of other people. So I'm proposing that we go about this a little differently. Instead of just using the metro service area, which is kind of an arbitrary set of counties that really doesn't include the entire metro, I'm suggesting we divide the projects into three pots. Pot number one, metro projects, would be projects that are either connected to or within the interstate beltline around the metropolitan area. Pot number two would be metro connector projects. In other words, projects that are outstate, but really they allow access into and or out of the metropolitan area. And we have, I think we kind of all know what those major roads are that lead directly in and out of the metro. And then finally, a third pot would be regional center projects. So projects that either connect regional centers or connect regional centers to other parts of the country, out of state, would get us those projects in greater Minnesota. I haven't assigned percentages yet to those three pots, and that's a topic of discussion as to how we divide the pot percentage-wise. And that, Mr. Chair, is kind of a brief outline of what I'm thinking of proposing and putting into language to be brought to this committee sometime in the near future.
Well, thank you, Representative Torkelson, and I really appreciate your not only your work on this, but your preparatory memo. It's clear your priorities and the direction you'd like to go, and of course, MnDOT as well. Very good and clear presentation. So, members, we have a couple of questions already, and we do have ample time if others want to chime in. We're going to start with Representative Mason and then move to Representative West. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. One is definitely when the Corridors of Commerce was initiated, it was to accomplish a certain objective, and it may have impacted the overall list of other projects as well. But I guess my greater concern seems to be now that we're seeing more, grandstanding or earmarking taking place. And that bothers me a whole lot. I mean, we know that there have been projects, and these are projects where people are dying on some of these roads. And yet, they could be there for, they're losing their spots where we're, for whatever reason, other projects are being put in front of them. And I guess I would like us to figure out how we can truly honor that, the list that we have, and stop playing games with things at the top. And I know it's a lot of this has to do with political issues or whatever, but I guess I find it really concerning because our roads, I mean, it's a public safety thing, and people should be able to count on us doing the best job we can without getting involved in a whole lot of political decisions. Just some thoughts. I've been talking with a couple of people recently about this same thing, so this topic really hits home right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mason. And, you know, I appreciated that Representative Torkelson and I and many others, past transportation chairs in particular, have a similar view that you do, Representative Mason, about earmarking. And I think a letter was written maybe as far back as 2017, 2016, I don't remember. Where again, we had many, many past chairs sign that letter, and I think we laid out the rationale for why earmarking is problematic. So I appreciate you raising that. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I love to see investments go into the Corridors of Commerce program. It's incredibly important, but nobody's ever happy with the results. And that's usually how it goes. And I guess I'll offer an alternative viewpoint to Representative Torkelson and Representative Mason in the chair is there's a reason we haven't seen the kind of investment in transportation that we've needed to see in this state. And it's because of the way we allocate the funds. If you want to get something done, you got to get people engaged and give them incentive to be engaged. And trying to take politics out of the political process is like trying to make an omelet without cracking eggs. It essentially can't be done unless you're going to buy that prefab garbage that comes in a carton. So one thing that I want to make clear is that we can work together, and earmarks are a way we can work together and actually get the investment in our roads and bridges that we need. And lastly, a lot of comments have been made about how a earmarked project or something like that is not well thought out, and they could not be ready, or the cost estimates are gone. And I would say that applies to agency projects as well as earmarks. And that's up for the legislature to decide. We shouldn't be approving earmarks that the legislator proposing them hasn't done the footwork to make sure they're squared up and ready to go. Because we've seen that the agencies also make tremendous mistakes when it comes to cost overruns and not anticipating problems. So with all this talk that earmarks are of the devil, I think we need to understand it's part of politics, and it's how we can get things done and actually get the money we need to rebuild this crumbling infrastructure in our state. Particularly in my case, Highway 65, there wasn't nearly enough movement until we started jumping up and down about that particular issue and was able to get it earmarked. So the process is moving. So I think we need to value that sense of it more, to where this is how you get people to work together. And we don't work together very well down here. Now, I think we work together pretty well.
Representative West, you cut out for a sec. Can you hear us?
We work together well on this committee, but I just want to offer an alternative viewpoint to where we can actually get this done. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative West, for your comments. And, you know, they are well taken. I had to grapple with the exact issues that you're raising in our conference committee last year, because this was really important issue for the Senate. And, you know, so there were lots. I mean, I don't remember. Maybe Mr. Udine remembers better than I do. I think there were a couple dozen at least of these earmark type projects. And, you know, in order to get to agreement, we took some in our bill. But, you know, we at least had some criteria. I mean, some of these projects weren't even shovel ready. They were still in a very early stage of planning. They didn't have the citizen buy-in. Representative West, that you very appropriately talked about. So I felt less bad about these projects, because at least MnDOT said, well, these are ready. This group of projects are ready. This other group are not. And so when we did have specific projects in our bill last year that I think passed, you know, very overwhelmingly, I was pleased with that on a bipartisan basis. Those were projects that at least I think met some minimal criteria. And so if we're going down that direction, we better make sure that that there are criteria and that they are shovel ready, and we're not picking winners and losers based on politics. But you make a good point, Representative West. I always thought it was funny when we have a discussion on the House floor and one member will accuse another of being political. We're politicians. It's like, you don't say to the doctor, you know, hey, doc, can you make the procedure a little less medical, right? So, you know, so I think you have some good points there that are worth noting. So, members, I don't see any more comments. I don't know if any of the testifiers, either from MnDOT or Representative Torkelson, wants to leave us with any words of wisdom, but I'll leave you with a big thank you and look forward to, I think this is a good year to have this discussion. I think it's a good year to address the corridors issues, and so I'm looking forward to this. You know what? Let's have one more comment from Representative Koznick, and then we'll have the summary comments. I don't know if your hand is up from last time, or you just are raising it now, Representative Koznick.
I just raised it.
Excellent.
I'm working my office, but I'm working off my phone. So
okay. Well, we have time. We have time for your comment or question, Representative Koznick. So the floor is yours.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson, I think you gave a great overview, and I look forward to seeing your ideas in legislative language bill form. But I think it's, you know, the corridors of commerce, and this kind of speaks to the more geopolitical struggle that we have sometimes, or I take that back, we have it quite frequently in transportation. And I know it's a very big concern of yours, Chair Torkelson, of where the money's spent, and you're trying to represent your district, and everybody else is trying to represent theirs. And I think it may, you know, I look forward to your bill, but I think it's important to recognize the purposes of the corridors of commerce in relation to where the other dollars are spent in our state in terms of geopolitical, if that's really what the crux of this is, whether it's in-state or out-state. And I am curious to work on this. You know, the whole metro gets lumped into one big tub of projects where we're competing against each other, but yet we fail to recognize quite frequently the amount of traffic and commerce that is happening in that area. And it's not to diminish projects that are important in other regional centers, but I think we fail to recognize that quite frequently. I think there was a memo put out, and I was digging for it in my office here, but I'm unable to find it, that talked about how many of these projects, and I think it was in the bonding, were in the metro, and it wasn't fair because they were, you know, wasn't outstate and all this kind of stuff. And I think we do a disingenuous effort to our mission of providing safe roads and transportation throughout the state when we just look at that factor of where the projects are located. So I hope that your bill encompasses the need for transportation, the need for commerce, and actually transporting and helping improve our economy with factors such as the number of usage in these areas. And I fully recognize that, you know, a road in, say, Mankato or Rochester is not going to be the same as Bloomington and Edina or Eagan. But it is important to note of where that those projects tend to cost more, maybe more expensive, but they're more highly used in a highly populated area. So I just kind of want to re-caution not just Representative Torkelson, but when we're looking at this, and we're all trying to provide for our districts, I get it, but we're also trying to provide a safe and efficient network of highways and bridges throughout the state that are important, and we need to do that as effectively as possible with the limited resources that we have, and rather than just throwing out a sheet of paper that says, hey, look, we got five projects outstate, and this is how much money they spent in the metro. I don't know that that's always helpful, and it's a frustration of mine as well. So I look forward to seeing more discussion on this and the bill, but I thought it was important to put on the record that this is a well-known struggle, the geopolitical tensions that have here, and rather than escalate them, let's be honest about what we're doing with our transportation dollars and where we spend our transportation dollars. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Torkelson, last word here. Ring us home.
Very briefly, though. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I don't think anyone has envisioned that corridors of commerce is the only way that projects get funded around the state. It's another funding mechanism that has attracted additional dollars to transportation, and I hope it continues that way. I appreciate all the comments today. It's challenging work, frankly. It's no easy thing, and it will always be controversial. But this particular program has been very useful in getting some projects moving that otherwise were languishing. They weren't happening. And I congratulate Representative Hornstein on his original concept of this with others, getting it in place, because it has been helpful. And I hope that we can come up with something that is useful. Project selection will always be controversial. I don't think there's any way to avoid that. I think we all need to remember that when a project gets funded, that project is taken off the list, and that means our projects, and we all have our favorite projects, our projects move up the list another notch. for the next round. You will notice, at least in my remarks, I try not to criticize any individual project. They're all worthy. But how we select the ones that get funded is part of our job here at the legislature. And putting together a program that works is something I think is a valuable exercise. I will liken it a little bit to redistricting. You know, when people ask me about redistricting, they said, well, what's the first thing you look at? I said, I look at my own district first, of course. Doesn't everybody?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good note to end on. Thank you, members. We'll be adjourned now. I just wanted to let you know our next meeting on Tuesday, we'll be talking about bus rapid transit, electric buses, and I look forward to that. And members, we are adjourned, and have a great weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.